OT After Dark is a podcast run by two occupational therapists and is for adults only. The views on this podcast are our own and are intended for information and educational purposes only. We believe that sex and sexual pleasure are a human right for consenting adults, regardless of ability, age, gender, or sexual orientation. We discuss topics that cover a wide variety of sex and sexual practices. To be true to our strong views regarding inclusivity, we use common and slang terms regarding sexual topics, which may be considered explicit. Listener discretion is advised.
We have exciting news to share. We recently partnered with DirectRec, a free app for OT practitioners, PT practitioners, and speech-language pathologists.
DirectRec helps clinicians to find peer-vetted products, and we recently have added our own recommendations of products on DirectRec for sexual health and wellness.
We helped DirectRec get a little extra sexy. DirectRec helps clinicians share products and other digital info, like YouTube videos and Google Docs, with their clients.
DirectRec helps you to track clients' follow-through on your product recommendations. So to start using DirectRec, click on the link on our website at otafterdark.com or in our social media bios.
Hi, I'm Kay.
And I'm JJ.
And we're both occupational therapists.
And we're here talking to you about sex.
We got a repeat guest.
The lovely Catherine Ellis.
We get a lot of questions, and I think Catherine gets a lot of questions about how to deal with patient flirtation.
Personal boundaries.
Things like that. So
ethics. Yeah. When dealing with sex and intimacy with clients. So why not go to the expert,
Catherine Ellis. So we're gonna talk to Catherine about all those things.
Enjoy. So we are here today with what I feel like is probably one of our most memorable guests.
Yes.
Catherine Ellis.
People still talk about the orange Catherine.
Oh, constant. So we're so glad to have you back on OT After Dark. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here again.
People really do bring up the orange rather often.
Yeah, that's amazing. I believe like when you guys asked me, you know, if I'd be interested in doing another podcast, I said, "Our orange is orange."
You did. You absolutely said that.
Yeah, of course I am.
So we're back. Tell everyone what we're here to talk about today.
So we're here to talk about the concern that many occupational therapists and occupational therapy students and professors
and occupational therapy assistants, I have to throw that in there.
Yep, I was getting there. Occupational therapy assistants is when addressing sex and intimacy with our patients, is that there's this fear or concern that perhaps the patient will flirt get this question quite a bit where, OT professionals will say, well, are you afraid that they're going to flirt with you, or do your clients flirt with you? Every once in a while I have heard, although no one has ever asked me this, but I've had some dialogue around the fear that maybe they'll fantasize mm-hmm. about you. That's what we're here to talk about. I feel really passionately about this because long story short, the answer is no. Just getting that out of the way right away, the answer is no. And so I realized, we created perhaps this barrier that doesn't even need to be a barrier. So we're here to talk about what's ethical and what's appropriate, what's ethical, and what commonly happens.
So
what's okay to happen.
Yeah. So my common experience is, no. When you initially bring up sex, the reaction is not to flirt. The reaction from clients is not to get like, let's talk about each other's sex life. It's never been
Let's talk dirty.
Yeah. That's never been the experience I've had. It's usually more of a serious, it becomes more of a serious conversation. That's not to say I haven't experienced clients who try to flirt, but it's never been around the topic of sexual activity or intimacy. There's just people that will flirt and you set boundaries, but it's never for me actually been linked to addressing sexuality.
That's been my similar experience. And I think sometimes the patients and the clients are so relieved to be able to talk mm-hmm. to someone about it. Mm-hmm. They know that it's a serious dialogue and they view you as a professional around the topic. So they don't, I think a lot of ways, like they don't want to mess it up. Now I think that what you're saying is so poignant in that we sometimes do interact with clients that are flirtatious with us. Mm-hmm. And I think of it as, I have three different thoughts when it comes to that. So one is that you know, in the healthcare setting, ideally you created a therapeutic relationship and a safe space, maybe for some of our clients to like explore flirtations again after a significant illness or injury. Mm-hmm. So really, I think one of the best guidance that I have used and I can give is saying like the worst thing that we can do is like shame them for those, you know, that style of like asserting themselves. I think it's a fabulous conversation starter, you know, saying like, hey, it sounds like you have, you know, some like desires to be flirtatious. Like, let's talk about this. I'm not necessarily an appropriate person to do that with, mm-hmm. but you can do that out in the community. How do you feel about it? So knowing that like it can be a conversation starter to talk about, you know, pursuing intimate relationships and flirting with someone, a potential sexual partner. It can be a great leeway into that. So you've set a boundary, you haven't shamed them, you've validated them, and now you like are launching into an intervention. Mm-hmm. I also think at the end of the day, we have to be, you know, flirting is not nefarious.
It's not the end of the world, right?
It's not the end of the world. It's not inappropriate. Flirting is a style of communication. Mm-hmm. It is a social interaction. Harassment is something that we maybe want to have some dialogue. Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a problem. Yeah.
Harassment is a little bit of a problem. But a flirtation, you know, that is met with a boundary is simply a flirtation. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I would say the idea of, well, creating therapeutic rapport. So I have had scenarios where, you know, I think the question is like, well, Catherine, like, do you ever flirt back? I would say no, I don't. But what I do use often is humor. Mm-hmm. I use sass. I use sarcasm. Mm-hmm. I use compassion. And all of this is to strengthen the therapeutic relationship. So remembering that, like, a flirtation is a social exchange. And I had this client that I worked with. This was many years ago. And he was very severely injured. He was very sick and had some, you know, polytraumatic injuries. His whole life had changed. And he was in the hospital for months. And every time that I walked in, he asked me at some point in the relationship, you know, in the therapeutic relationship, he asked me if I had a boyfriend. And at the time I did. And he actually had a girlfriend, which was quite funny. But then he was a very funny person. He was very playful and he was flirtatious. Mm-hmm. And those are characteristics that when he asserted them, it made him feel full. Mm-hmm. It made him feel satisfied with himself, and it spoke to his true authentic identity, which at that point in his life he had very little things that he could engage in that really spoke to his true identity. Mm-hmm. Because of the traumatic experiences, you know, that he was going through. So every time I walked in after that, he would go, hey, you still have that boyfriend? And I would sort of laugh, and I would go, well, do you still have that girlfriend? And of course he would say, yeah. You know, it was his way of like was it flirty? Yeah, sure. But it was also his way of just engaging with, you know, another person that is similar to his age and of the opposite sex, and we're both straight individuals. And it was his way of, you know, feeding that side of him. And so ultimately I viewed it as like, hey, like, this is progress. Like, this is maintenance, or this is progress for his sense of self.
And then did you really see that exchange as being like a sexual flirtation then, or is it a different type of flirtation than in that moment?
Yeah, I mean, so I do agree that like in so many ways this is subjective, and I always want OT professionals to feel like they, you know, it's what matters is how you feel about it.
Because I think, I do think some practitioners would be uncomfortable. Absolutely. With it.
So what I did not particularly find it sexual. And I will be honest, he didn't either. Mm-hmm. He was not being sexual with me. He was being playful. But if I had said to him at the very first time that he did that, if I had said, hey, you know, I don't really feel comfortable with you asking me every time I come in, it would have been fine.
Yeah.
It would have been fine. And he would have been okay. And the therapeutic relationship would have been just fine. We would have found a different way to be playful and funny. And so it's important, you know, for OTs to think of, you know, knowing that like these events aren't inherently sexual or like proceed with caution, don't violate, you know, bad, bad, bad.
Yeah.
It's more so saying like, you know, how do you feel like you're using your best therapeutic use of self?
And I think
your comfort level.
And I think it's important for people to understand, because I know, I think students in particular who have this question about how do I respond, I think it's important for them to know there's not one way to respond.
Absolutely.
You know, there's, in this case, like you can, you know, kind of flirt back or draw your line, whatever you're comfortable with.
There's not a script to follow in this situation.
There's no scripts in occupational therapy, which is why it's so great.
I mean, so there's where like within that script, we have to know that there's multiple ways to use therapeutic use of self appropriately and without like, you know, there was no leading. I wasn't leading him on. I wasn't inappropriate. And ultimately, like, you know, we form relationships with our patients. This gentleman and I are actually friends to this day. We're actually quite friends, and it's never been sexual. It's always been a friendship. Now I have had other clients like, you know, sure. So I, you know, the answer is like, have they flirted with you? And I laugh and I say like, well, statistically, the statistically significant answer is no. But like if I've had 600 patients, 4 have flirted with me, 2 have asked me out, and 1 person said something to me that I actually interpreted as uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So the
it's answer a very small really percentage like, of the interactions that you're having.
A very small percentage. And I did feel with the one person that I felt was overstepping, I felt equipped to handle it.
Yeah.
So this, you know, and so this gentleman, I was meeting with him, and he just did, I think what he did was a little bit of like overstepping on privacy. So he just sort of made an aside comment, and he looked at me and he was like, I just have one question for you. And I'm like, okay. He goes, you must have a really wild sex life.
Yes, just because you tell us to talk about sex.
and I just said, you know, I don't talk about that in my practice. So that's not an important dialogue for us today. And we moved on from it.
Yeah, and I think that's important across the board, no matter what a patient might say to you, if it's crossed a boundary, whether it be about sex, about your religion, about anything in your personal life, just establish that boundary. In my experience, then you go on and you still can build a therapeutic relationship. You've said your piece, You've been polite about it. Typically, they respect that. It's been my experience, mm-hmm. no matter what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I will tell you that I have had clients say far more offensive things to me that had nothing to do with sex.
Me too. Yes, absolutely. Oh, same here. 100%.
I've had clients question why I'm still single.
Mm-hmm.
I've had clients shocked that I don't have children.
Oh, that's a
You know, and I personally, I mean, why are you still single? I find that quite offensive.
Yeah, I've been like scolded because I don't have children. Like I've been like chastised.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, and have I been able to get over those exchanges? Yeah. Like very quite quickly, but you know, so those are my experiences. Now, I do think that it's important to sort of like as a profession address the dialogue around, you know, supporting each other when maybe some of those interactions are perhaps harmful, mm-hmm. or we're confused and we don't really know how to process it. So I often find because there's patient flirtations are one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've also noticed that there's this sometimes an unhealthy, it seems like a maybe unhealthy is not the correct term, but perhaps a misinformed dialogue around fantasizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have heard of the perspective that we would not want our occupational therapy professionals to address sex and intimacy with their clients for fear that perhaps the client would then go and fantasize about them,
mm-hmm.
which I think is very interesting.
Yeah. I was going to say too, like you can't necessarily control someone's fantasies and what there could triggers be, such
you
fantasies.
You could not be talking about sex at all and there could still be fantasies.
Let's just be honest. Most of the profession is female.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is a woman talking about sex is not inherently sexualizable,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's just a woman talking about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And the same goes for men. So we should not view ourselves as temptresses or the tempter, you know, respectfully. And as a profession, I think we need to be very clear and careful that we don't perpetuate a stereotype that says, you know, a woman speaking on sex is, you know, dangerous,
mm-hmm.
or something that is, you know, that we understand that fantasies are the ownership of the person that is fantasizing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so creating a message that says that something that I could do, I am then responsible for someone else's sexual fantasy is problematic.
That's problematic just in daily living. Not even.
Right.
Not even just within the field of occupational therapy. It's.
Yeah. If you're going to try to control that and take ownership of other people's fantasies. That's exhausting.
Right. Yeah. But, this idea that the person, you know, we should not, you know, if it's a professional talking about sex, it's like, oh, well, what if they then go fantasize about you? It's like perpetuating this, this message that ownership is, and that responsibility is on the man or the woman that brought up sex. And that is inherently flawed and
mm-hmm.
quite harmful. We want to, being a sex positive profession, we want to share the message that people have ownership and agency and responsibility over their own sexuality,
mm-hmm.
Not somebody else's, and certainly not that you're at fault for somebody else's, you know, sexual experience. So we want to certainly like shy away from that. And I think the message then more so becomes understanding fantasies. So, you know, when we have a sexual fantasy, that is something that is in our head. And that is something that doesn't always get acted on.
Yeah, right.
And so understanding that many people have sort of flourishing, vibrant fantasies that they never act on.
Mm-hmm.
And they never, maybe in some ways it enhances their relationship with their partner. Maybe in some ways it completely doesn't affect their relationship with their partner. And then I'm sure in some scenarios, perhaps it limits their relationship with their mm-hmm. partner. But there is every possibility under the sun. And I think that people are far more, far more sort of expansive in what they fantasize about than what we really know.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And like we were saying, who knows? Who knows who's fantasizing about you and what is triggering those fantasies?
Right. And that's such an intimate detail about an individual that sometimes they only choose to share with other people they feel comfortable discussing that topic with and in those intimate moments. And
yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, again, there's like, using, fear of someone fantasizing about, the OT professional as a barrier, I certainly would recommend that as a profession, we not let that be a barrier. No. Again, because it creates this flawed understanding of who owns the fantasy and who's responsible for it. However, it's possible, like you said, for, sometimes, again, it seems like perhaps rare cases, but for the client to overstep, mm-hmm. we work with people that have a wide variety of diagnoses,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they're overstepping for like shock value. Maybe they don't sort of understand those social barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they think they're like just flirting or complimenting mm-hmm. someone, right?
Yeah.
Like all of these things. And in some of them, it's a behavior that we would like to, avoid or not praise.
Mm-hmm.
So I was chatting with a student that was sharing that, a patient literally said to her, I'm going to go home and fantasize about you while I touch myself. And that's sort of like dialogue that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, right.
Those scenarios, as we're sharing, are so few. We mm-hmm. need to, though, like, OT professionals do need to be equipped to counter that and mm-hmm. deal with that. And that's uncomfortable, and that's a shame. And I think that, I hope that OT had some support around mm-hmm. Him or her, that they were able to then, like, kind of talk that out and feel okay about it. But, we can't let those sort of scenarios like prevent all interaction with other clients. And again, it's just another inappropriate behavior that we can deal with in a professional manner.
What's your advice on how to deal with that?
Yeah.
It's coming.
This is how I would handle it. I'm such a big, big supporter of like all of my interactions. I try to not give shame.
Yeah.
And I really try to not include shame in the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I always want, people to not feel shame when they've expressed themselves in a sexual way. So what I would have said to this is that, I think I would have said something like, I'm happy to know that you are engaging in self-pleasure. I don't need to know, I would have said, I can't control what you think about.
Mm-hmm.
I would ask you to not share
yeah.
with me if you are thinking of me. Mm-hmm. I don't need to know that. I don't want to know that.
Yeah. Establish that boundary without the stigma. Without
putting the shame around it, like you said, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's just very objective. I'm happy you're engaging in sex, self-pleasure. Acknowledging that it's for no reason of mine are you fantasizing about me. Mm-hmm. I can't control what you fantasize about. Mm-hmm. I just ask that when you're fantasizing about me that I don't need to know that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
I'm looking at our list.
Yeah. I think, we had talked about this a little bit earlier and you kind of sent this to us, but the idea of ethics and boundaries, I think that's an interesting topic. And I know you've got some really great thoughts on ethics and boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a great dialogue around what are the actual barriers that we have. So what ethically do OT professionals need to be concerned about? The Code of Ethics says that you cannot romantically date somebody that is on your caseload. Okay, got it. But after they're off your caseload, you're not bound by any ethical, professional policy that says that you can't, pursue a romantic relationship with anyone. So it's just like understanding where we have the ethical obligation, mm-hmm. and knowing that, we're all humans at the end of the day, and and sparks and romance and desire and love, right? Friendship.
Yeah.
All of these things can get sparked by two people meeting.
Yeah.
And so it's just maintaining your boundary. And just because you flirt, if you flirt back and you give a patient like some extra sass, it's not an invitation for them to ask you out. Mm-hmm. It's not like you should, you're saying to them like, oh, when you're off my caseload, like, let's go out to dinner. It's not what you're doing. It's not what's going on. This doesn't, it's just saying that these sort of relationships occur.
Mm-hmm.
They just occur. And professionally, we have said you cannot date someone that's on your caseload. So now the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, they have a slightly different code of ethics there. Mm-hmm. Their policy, if you have a certification like I do, I'm a sexuality counselor as mm-hmm. well, their professional stance is that you cannot date a patient at any point after your engagement with them. So I think it's just important to highlight that different professional organizations have different policies. And so people would ask like me, okay, well, what do you do? So I practice to the most strict standard.
Mm-hmm.
I practice to the standard that is, the most restrictive. So I would practice to the ASECT
mm-hmm.
standard.
Dating is off limits.
And I actually think state practice acts differ on that. I'm not totally sure, but I don't think every state practice. I think state practice acts in the United States. So the United States, every state has their own laws and rules about practice. I do think some are more specific on the relationships after the therapeutic relationships end. But I'm not totally sure. But I do think there are some that are stricter than others on that.
I'm sure that there are. So it is important, knowing the state policy there and mm-hmm. then, practicing to whichever policy is the more restrictive, I think, is the best way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Though I can tell you, I mean, I know of therapists that are trying to think. I know of at least a physical therapist that's married to...
I know several OTs that...
They were a client and nothing happened and now...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think twice about it. I imagine that they were very professional
mm-hmm.
during the therapeutic relationship
mm-hmm.
and that they met and afterwards got to know each other. Yeah. And I think that that's, just another way that people can meet. And when you think about how you know, the work that we do is, you know, a way that you can meet people, like really get to know people, and understand people. I think that it's not like a crazy thought that we would have some instances where people get together after the fact in a way that's romantic or in a way that is loving. Now, I do think too, like one dialogue that, you know, I want to make sure that we have a discussion on is that I'm speaking kind of globally around different clients that we could work with. So, you know, the gentleman that I was sharing where he said, you know, every day he asked me, do you still have that boyfriend? Mm-hmm. And every day I said, you still have that girlfriend? This was a gentleman that, you know, he didn't have a brain injury. He did not, he did not have cognitive deficit. He, you know, had no sort of like, diagnosis or previous behavior, right? That made it, you know, that I had to treat him differently. So this would be different maybe if you worked on a locked brain injury. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that when you work on a locked brain injury unit, all of your social interactions are calculated, mm-hmm. and intentional.
Yeah.
And everything that you say is in an intervention,
mm-hmm.
A way to positively reinforce or negatively reinforce a certain behavior. So is that, if you worked in that setting or like a dementia unit or a psych ward, would your interactions be different than what I'm describing? Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know, the part of the therapeutic relationship is knowing what your client needs. So for example, this gentleman, you know, what did he need? He needed normal, age-appropriate social interactions.
Yeah.
Okay. What does your client need who, you know, maybe has severe cognitive impairment and is, you know, masturbating in the hallway,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, asking everyone to marry her?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that client needs something different from you,
yeah.
in the therapeutic relationship sort of way. So that client, you know, needs boundary setting or needs negative reinforcement or positive reinforcement of positive behavior. You know, maybe needs you to not have a shock value. So mm-hmm. like when she, you know, says something inappropriate or flirts with you, then you don't respond in a way that is like super shock value.
Yeah. So
that it will perhaps positively reinforce that behavior. So as the clinician, like you know what they need for the therapeutic relationship, and every client is different.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It doesn't matter if sexuality is involved or not. Building that therapeutic relationship, again, there is no script. There is, and it's hard, especially for students, because it is something, and what every student probably hates to hear, it comes with time, it comes with experience. But it really does come with time and experience, not just on the job, but just as being a human being, of how you are going to respond to different people different ways.
And connect with people.
Connect with different people, mm-hmm. with different ways, and you start to learn that some people need humor. Some people are not going to want humor. They're going to want a very kind of serious, straightforward response.
Matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. Some people like the sass. Some people, that's all. The only way you're going to get them back to therapy is giving them a little sass. But no matter what you're addressing, whether it's sexual activity or toileting or financial management, to build that therapeutic relationship, you have to be able to read that person. And like you were saying, meet them where they are, see what they need, see what response they need, which is going to be different for everyone, which is probably not what a lot of people listening want to hear.
No, and you know, I think about this often too. So I think that there's something to be said for understanding like what your core strengths are, mm-hmm. with social interaction.
Absolutely.
So I have some pretty decent sass.
Me too.
And I'm... So I have some pretty decent sass. I've got on point sarcasm.
Oh yeah, I'm fluent.
And I, you know, out. So socially, like not at work, I do have a flirtatious personality. Mm-hmm. Now, something, I don't really use humor. I have never been super successful using humor, like super well timed. Mm-hmm. So I have a peer who is an OTA and her skill set is humor. It's yeah. like, it could be a really tense environment and she can just land an amazing joke and to just, it's a compassionate joke. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone feels better when she uses her yeah. authentic strength of humor. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm better at sarcasm mm-hmm. in those scenarios than I am at humor. And sarcasm doesn't always work. And if sarcasm's not going to work, and sass probably yeah. isn't either. And right. so then I implement my compassion. Yeah. I also can be very compassionate. And so knowing like what your strengths are, saying like you don't have to fake the yeah. funk. Like you don't have to just, you know, all of a sudden use this skill that like mm-hmm. maybe isn't your best strength. So viewing these difficult therapeutic yeah. relationships from a strength-based perspective, I think is really helpful.
And I think it's really important if you're working on a rehab team for everyone to understand your strengths and to be okay. I mean, I worked somewhere where OT department was me as occupational therapist, and then there were two occupational therapy assistants. And when new patients would come in, we had conversations about whose personality would match mm-hmm. that new patient the best. Because we knew that some people were going to respond really well to my sarcastic self. Some people were going to want the sweet, compassionate, not sarcastic person. but it is really important when we're talking about building that therapeutic relationship to understand your personality strengths and not be upset if certain people don't like you and don't respond as well to you as they respond to maybe one of your coworkers.
You know, I think that one skill set that can be learned is the skill set of validating mm-hmm. the client. This is especially, my whole caseload is sex and intimacy. And so I find that if you have nothing left to say, this is in general, saying something like that must be really tough. That sucks. That I know this is frustrating for you, that you can't get on the toilet. You know, I know this is frustrating for you that you feel like you can't, you know, fulfill your duties as, you know, your masculine duties or your feminine duties or these roles that mm-hmm. you care about. Mm-hmm. When it comes to sex, I find that this is always an easy, if the listeners want an easy answer,
get your pen and paper out.
Pen and paper. Here's the easy answer. If you can just take a second to validate them in their experience, in their frustration, mm-hmm. in their trauma, in their experience with discrimination, racism, mm-hmm. Sexism, ageism. Or their shame, maybe, that they have around their sexuality, or their embarrassment, or just the fact that they feel like they want to perform in this certain way, but they can't. Mm-hmm. You can take a second and just validate yeah. that. That is huge, because the reality is that they're probably sharing with you something that they don't mm-hmm. often share with others, and they're even unsure about speaking it, speaking it out into the world. And whether you use humor or a sort of super funny, sassy joke mm-hmm. or compassion, like if you just validate them in that experience, I think that is huge.
And don't brush over it. Because I think sometimes especially when you're caught up in a busy schedule and newer practitioners too, if you're just unsure of what you're doing and you're focusing on all these things, sometimes clients share things and it's really easy to brush it off.
But
and forget to validate.
Yeah, and people want to be heard.
Yeah.
And understand that they're being heard.
Yeah. I mean, we can validate by just saying like that sounds frustrating, or let me repeat what I think that you're saying. Mm-hmm. Am I getting this right?
Yeah.
Wow, that must be tough. Like, you know, just, we can work on this. Like, thank you for sharing that. I know that that was a lot. Like, we can certainly work on these things, you know, giving mm-hmm. them some amount of hope in the intervention. So I think that can be like, a validating is a very good skill that can absolutely be learned.
Yeah. Do we have any final?
Catherine, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Of course. So everyone can find me on my website, which is www.sexintimacyot.com. And I'm also on Instagram, Twitter, at sexintimacyot. And I have, on my website, you can find me and you can reach out to me. I offer online courses. Currently, I have 2 courses available, and there are many more to be added. And I also offer consultation services as well as custom learning events. So if your facility or your student program is interested in creating a custom learning event around sexuality and intimacy, mm-hmm. I am excited to collaborate. And I've done some really cool, fun events, collaborations in the last 2 months, and it went really well. So I've got a few more lined up for 2020, and I'm really excited about that, what I'm doing, especially to, you know, adding more online courses. We can just continue to enhance the readiness of occupational therapy professionals to address sex and intimacy with their clients.
And we'll all be at AOTA 2020 in Boston, right? You'll be there.
Yep. I'm very excited. I'm doing the student session again, which is one of my favorite things to do. I'm super excited. I'm planning my marketing, my promotions, my outfits, my content.
Excellent. You
know, I'm so excited.
I'm going to submit for a conversation mm-hmm. that matters to address sexuality, a sort of guided self-reflection to address sexuality values, beliefs, and bias, mm-hmm. And working on how to reconcile bias that we might have. So that's also another custom learning event that I can do for mm-hmm. programs and facilities.
Great.
So we all have a glass of wine right now. We can cheers right now.
Yes.
We sure do. I was very excited about that. I specifically went and got the wine for the podcast. And I just want to thank you guys again for hosting me, and also just all of the incredible other podcasts y'all put together.
It's fun. It's been fun. Yeah, and we're happy to have you in the more, I mean, it was fun the last time you were on too, but we're happy to have you in this slightly more intimate
setting
and talk. So let's all cheers. And let's all say sex is an ADL. Cheers.
Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed the conversation with Catherine Ellis as much as we did.
I think it was absolutely fabulous. Catherine is kind enough to be offering a promo code, a discount of 20% for her courses. If you go to her website, sexintimacyot.com, and use the promo code OTAfterDarkPromo, you'll get that 20% off.
And that offer expires on January 31st, 2020.
Remember, sex is an ADL.
Cheers!